I want to start with a number of thank yous, especially to our speakers, musicians, organizers, deacons, and other aspects of our security team, the AV, the culinary arts, the church staff, and also for the denominational administrators that have made this weekend doable. I also want to thank everyone who had the courage to write or call me and talk to me directly about any encouragement or concerns they had for this weekend. Or indeed, this is the way of Christ. Much has been mentioned over the last few months about Leviticus 19 and the quote of Jesus, to love your neighbor as yourself. But the entire context of that message is this. You should not hate your fellow countrymen in your heart. You may surely reprove your neighbor, but you shall not incur sin because of him. You shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the sons of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. In other words, God is calling us to talk out and to live out the love of Jesus. The goal of this weekend is fourfold. Number one, to strengthen Christians in a biblical understanding of the issues of conscience and coercion as it relates to the current mandates for various COVID vaccines. Number two, to understand and enable early treatment of COVID, thus empowering the individual to be responsible and proactive in protecting both his own and her own, along with the community health. Number three, to inform regarding issues of legality and exemption in regards to government or employer compulsion of force, which are often referred to as mandates. And to address the insecurity and imbalance of our postmodern media world, which has resulted in the oppression of free speech and discussion regarding issues of paramount importance to the personal and civic health of our country and its citizens. We believe that the metrics of mental health, social well-being, educational advancement, and economic realities on a national and individual level, including the fundamental right to livelihood, require an honest and full spectrum approach to the pandemic. We believe that the overt or covert threatenings of licensure and suppression of medical discussion regarding early treatment and the off-label use of drugs is an unmeasured catastrophe in the past 15 months. To be clear, this weekend is not an anti-vaccination event. The presenters represent various levels of caution or confidence in the current COVID vaccines. Some of our presenters are vaccinated against COVID, some have already experienced the disease, and some have not. The emphasis of this weekend is built around the medical mandate of, and these are very important words, especially if you're a medical person, informed consent. These are two concepts that protect the health and the well-being of individuals and nations. Unfortunately, the current media landscape makes a proper understanding of informed consent very difficult. Navigating between news agencies and websites sifting for the truth can be overwhelming. Perhaps we should not be surprised that this is not an entirely new situation. The life and times of Jesus were surrounded by similar circumstances. The stewards of cultural messaging were unsettled by the organic popularity of this grassroots messianic movement. Eventually, the boldness of the Sanhedrin knew no bounds, and it exercised itself in a mandate for all who knew of the whereabouts of Jesus to report it for his subsequent arrest. That can be found in Luke 11:57. What's unusual about this situation is that right when the Pharisees and Sadducees felt powerful enough to reach out and take control and declare Jesus an outlaw, the triumphal entry was just around the corner by a few days, and the masses would declare him their hero. But before the weekend, Jesus was in their grasp and headed for the cross. Only one man stood between the Christ and his crucifixion. That was the Roman governor. And now, we like Pilate are compelled to ask, what is truth? The answer was not so dependent on the words of Jesus as it was the character of the questioner. And I want you to think about that. The essence of all truth stood in the presence of one that was more righteous than the Pharisees and Sadducees who had brought him there. And yet his heart was not set on truly following truth. John, the gospel writer, announces that the light shone in the darkness and the darkness did not comprehend it. One is compelled to ask, how can such things be? The unfolding answer of his gospel is the story of self-imposed blindness to Jesus, the Messiah, who was the light of the world. This is a condition from which it is almost impossible to recover. In other words, truth is a function of the heart in desire more than it is a set of data. And while we are scientific and believe in the pursuit of data, we understand that it is all interpreted. That interpretation might depend on character and courage as much as anything else. For as much as information matters in times like these, the spirit of a man or a woman of truth recognizes and responds to the spirit of truth even before it can completely analyze and evaluate the subject matter at hand. In other words, birds of a feather will indeed flock together, and there is something to be said about wanting to hear the truth before you can see and accept the truth. If a mind is a priori decided, if it is of an opinion unchangeable, then we're back to the age-old adage, don't confuse me with the facts, my mind is already made up. This element of character will be central as a dividing and deciding issue at the end of times. In the Great Controversy, the author describes a situation in the last days when the examination of data will yield only partial benefit to its examiner. Genuine miracles and demonic deceptions of the same nature will have flooded the landscape of planet Earth. On page 612, this is what she writes. Servants of God with their faces lighted up and shining with holy consecration will hasten from place to place to proclaim the message from heaven. By thousands of voices all over the earth, the warning will be given. Miracles will be wrought, the sick will be healed, and signs and wonders will follow the believers. But there is a problem. Satan also works with lying wonders, even bringing down fire from heaven in the sight of men, according to Revelation 13:13. Thus the inhabitants of the earth will be brought to take their stand. At some level, how unfortunate that the data will be all over the board and indisputable at some level. It will be a competing narrative with competing interpretations, and a competing set of data will be before every human being. And with a complete chokehold on the venues of communication, God's people will be reduced to face-to-face and in-person giving of the final message of warning and hope. Why is this? It appears that now, as of old and in the future, the spirit of truth must connect with a person of truth in order for it to be recognizable. And of course, where we start and where we finish may be very different, like the Apostle Paul, formerly as Saul, who was an enemy of the gospel and then its greatest proponent. Just like today, at the very end, everyone will be freighted with the responsibility of making their own decision, of recognizing the spirit of truth, even if they can't crunch all the data. The spirit of truth is humble, which allows for dialogue and examination. It is respectful, which critiques ideas and not people. It is patient because it understands the eventual triumph of right. It is courageous, knowing the rarity and fragility of liberty. It is bold, which is without fear and trusting the source of all truth. And it is willing to suffer, to experience the cost of intellectual and spiritual integrity in an age of darkness and oppression. When Solomon was confronted with the mystery of the harlot mothers, he faced a similar situation. Before summoning the soldier and the sword, he surveyed the character of the women before him. One was coarse and callous, one was heartbroken and grieving. The contrived appearance of an execution was simply an amplification of the impress of the spirit of the true mother on the king. Solomon was taking a calculated risk, but not too much of a risk, for he knew that real love would suffer. The real mother would rather look into the eyes of her own child in the arms of an evil woman and grieve day after day than to see its lifeless form on the palace floor. And Solomon said, "Give her the child, she's the real mother." We cannot indemnify, which means put beyond the reach of accountability, the pharmaceutical companies and vilify those who have concerns. Ad hominem attacks are neither befitting to intellectual culture or the rational examination of ideas, to say nothing of the higher standards of Christian deportment and the spirit of truth. This weekend is designed to help honest people make informed choices. It's predicated on a belief that there are a variety of ways to care for public health and allow for human agency over one's body. This weekend is in harmony with the voted policy of the Seventh-day Adventist Church as published in the Adventist Review, and it desires to protect and respect the pursuit of truth. As a young woman in her early 20s, not of my faith, said to me on Wednesday afternoon of this week, "The process of deciding whether or not to get a vaccination should include all the important information, such as what exactly the vaccine is, what exactly the vaccine does, every possible outcome or side effect. The process of decision making should not be manipulated by incentives of winning money, getting free beer, or donuts. God demonstrates his love towards us," she went on to say, "by not only telling us the truth, but by giving us the freedom to make our own decisions, fully aware of the consequences." The last two sentences, quoting this young woman, "The issue isn't whether or not the vaccine is good or bad. The issue is access to the whole truth encompassing the vaccine and the freedom to decide based on that truth. Because the COVID vaccines are the current extension of compulsion and force, and because many respected physicians, scientists, and healthcare workers, along with a whole host of ordinary citizens, have concerns, the vaccine itself will be the subject of discussion at times. But it is not the focus of the weekend. Liberty of conscience, early treatment, and liberty of the press are its focus. All questions for the weekend have been submitted prior to the event. The speakers will not be available for personal consultation. References and materials will be available on our website at the conclusion of the event. We solicit your prayers and appeal to the nobility of Christ that the weekend may proceed as a model for honest and respectful dialogue." Let us pray. Lord, our nation is in the grips of fear. And sometimes it's fear of open dialogue. Sometimes it's fear of exposure. Sometimes it's fear of sickness and death. I'm praying now, Lord, that your spirit would descend on this body, on those watching online, and that we would be people of truth. May we be willing to change our minds, alter our opinions, and follow that truth wherever it leads. This is the Protestant way. It has been the Adventist way. And liberty has been protected through the sacrifice of many to keep us. You'll be very blessed as well in this next segment. I want to introduce to you this afternoon Matthew D. Staver. Matt Staver serves as a senior pastor, founder, and chairman of Liberty Council. Chairman of Liberty Council Action, Faith, and Liberty, National Pro-Life Center, Freedom Federation, Salt and Light Council, and the National House of Hope. He's the founder and chairman of Liberty Relief International, vice president and chief counsel of the National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference, which includes over 42,000 evangelical Hispanic churches. He's the former vice president of Liberty University, former dean and tenured professor of law at Liberty University School of Law, trustee of Timothy Plan, a New York and Tel Aviv Stock Exchange traded family of mutual funds, trustee of the Supreme Court Historical Society, member of the Board of Reference of the Christian Film and Television Commission, and member of the Board of Advisors of Care for Pastors, founder and former president of Staver & Associates, and founder and former president of the Staver Group. Matt has over 300 published legal opinions. He authored 8 scholarly law publications, many booklets and brochures, hundreds of articles, and numerous books, including Why Israel Matters, Past, Present, and Forever, and Eternal Vigilance, Knowing and Protecting Your Religious Freedom. Matt produces and hosts Faith and Freedom, an 11-minute daily radio program, Freedom's Call, a 60-second daily radio program, and Freedom Alive, a 30-minute weekly TV program. He also produces a Bible study podcast. He's a frequent guest on many international and national network and cable television and radio programs, and has been interviewed for thousands of print and electronic media sources. Matt has filed numerous briefs and argued in many federal and state courts, including the U.S. Supreme Court. He's argued 2 landmark cases before the High Court, Madison versus Women's Health Center and McCreary County versus ACLU of Kentucky. Prior to law school, Matt pastored several churches. He reads Hebrew, Aramaic, Greek, and Syriac. He graduated first in a seminary class and wrote the longest master's thesis in the history of the school at that time, entitled A Quest for the Historical Jesus, an Inquiry into the Historicity of the Passion Predictions. Using historical research methods, he defended the historicity of the Passion statements of Jesus. While in the seminary, he was invited to present his research to biblical scholars from around the world at an American Society of Oriental Research annual conference. And Matt continues to preach, baptize, and perform other religious functions. Matt has the highest AV rating given to attorneys by the Martindale Hubble. He's board certified in appellate practice by the Florida Bar. Matt has a BA in theology, cum laude, Southern Missionary College, MA religion, summa cum laude, Andrews University, JD, University of Kentucky, LLD, honoris causa, Liberty University, DD, honoris causa, South Florida Bible College. Follow Matt on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. He's licensed in Florida and the District of Columbia. He's Florida Bar Board certified in appellate practice. And I had the opportunity to be in a ministry event last Sunday with Mr. Staver and was very blessed and benefited and impressed with his demeanor and understanding of the subject matter. So I think this afternoon you will be blessed as we turn the time over to Mr. Matt Staver. Thank you, Matt, for joining us for this weekend.
Okay, working now. All right. Well, let's go ahead and begin the presentation, and I'll work our way through this. And I am told that you can hear me now, so that's good. Let's look at the very first thing that we are dealing with here, and that is with our PowerPoint. And what we see with regards to these COVID shots, vaccinations, if you will, is there is a global vaccination plan, and that predated COVID. In fact, we began messaging about this in March and April of 2020. When we began seeing the pandemic lockdowns, we began working with pastors and churches, and we represented several thousand pastors and churches with regards to these overreaching and eventually these executive orders that were ruled unconstitutional. We began looking at what was all this about, because what we had discovered, and our team has spent hundreds if not thousands of hours, that there had been a global vaccination plan that had been going on for many, many years. And that goes back to a number of years ago. Bill Gates and many, many others wanted to vaccinate everybody on the planet. And that at the time was about 7 billion people on the planet to vaccinate. That was part of a broader agenda that Bill Gates and others had in mind. We're not going to spend time to get into what that agenda is, but you can research it for yourself. But to vaccinate everybody on the planet, 7 billion people, clearly what was discussed before COVID is that you need coercion, you need some kind of coercion, typically from the government. Obviously, you're getting it in 2 different forms right now, and that's from both the government as well as from the private sector. you need some coercion, because not everybody is going to want to be vaccinated. And it's not just regarding these COVID shots or booster shot, but it's any kind of series of vaccinations that you have from time to time. Nobody's going to have 100% vaccination. So in order to vaccinate everybody on the planet, you need some kind of coercion. But you also need, in addition to coercion, some kind of tracking mechanism as well. That tracking mechanism has already been discussed. There have been ideas, there have been technology that was developed. There are certain kinds of vaccines that you put on your finger and it feels like sandpaper. It's little tiny spikes or needles, if you will, very small, go into your skin and administer the vaccine of whatever vaccine that you have. But when you take it off, it's like a piece of tape. It has some kind of code that you can read under certain kinds of lighting. That's to determine whether or not you've gotten that particular kind of vaccine. Obviously, one way to determine whether you had vaccine is through some kind of cellular cell telephone, maybe a QR code, but not everybody globally, if you want to make this plan implement globally, has access to cell towers or certain kind of technology. So the other kinds of things that have been in discussion and in development is insertable chips. Bottom line is, there has been a global plan for a number of years to vaccinate every person, 7 billion, on the planet. And the only way you can do that is through some kind of coercion for those that are resisting, and also some kind of tracking to determine whether or not somebody is vaccinated. So let's go to the next slide. Let's look at the COVID shots in particularly. Normally, what you have with regards to any vaccine, and obviously some of this was covered, but I'll go through it very quickly, is you have a typical time frame of 7 to 10 years minimum to create a vaccine. Usually it's at least 10 years, 5 years of which is the testing phase. And that way you can determine whether you have short, mid, or long-term complications from that vaccine. This is before it ever reaches the public distribution. 93% of all vaccines fail in that trial, and they never reach the deployment phase to the public, 93%+. The COVID vaccines are unprecedented because the time frame is unlike anything we've ever seen. From beginning to end, from March/April to December, is a period of 8 to 9 months. And obviously, as you already heard from the experts, many of the segments that they're now wanting to get these shots have never received those shots. We've never had an mRNA technology approved for any kind of vaccine or any kind of ingestion by humans. Moderna, which is one of the mRNA companies, is a 10-year-old company as of 2020, and it has never received any FDA approval for any drug. The Pfizer component of the mRNA is actually created by a German company, BioNTech. As of 2020, it was an 8-year-old German company, and it's never had any FDA approved a drug of any kind. So those are the two that came out of the box. And obviously the next one after that is a different kind of technology, but they always develop or involve the spike protein, and that's the Johnson & Johnson one. Before we go into the COVID shots and emergency use, I want to move my way to get to the religious freedom issues and what we're seeing around the country. I want to take you over to this particular screen. And as you go down, it's lc.org/vaccine, lc.org/vaccine. And it has hundreds and hundreds of articles, and it would take you literally hundreds and hundreds of hours to go through all the material that we have put together. I want to look at just a couple of different places. One is under what we have as adverse reactions and deaths. And this relates specifically to the three COVID shots that are currently in the United States, Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson. Particularly, I want to look at this particular document here, which is the VAERS data chart. This is updated every week. And here, this is related to the specific COVID shots, not vaccines in general, the specific COVID shots. So since deployment of the first shot or the vaccine in December of 2020, which was Pfizer, until now, a period of about now 8 months maximum, you've had 592,620 reports of adverse events. Of that, you have 13,068 deaths, 54,142 hospitalizations, and 98,761 office visits. You can scroll down here and you'll see this here, 1,607 miscarriages, 5,882 heart attacks, myocarditis, pericarditis 4,861. You can go into each one of these and you can learn more about these particular issues, and you can find the stories that accompany these particular injuries. This one is quite alarming as well, 17,228 permanent disabilities. That is shocking. I'll come back to that in a few moments. But when you scroll down here towards what is called personal stories. This particular one, the C19 Vax link, if you click on that, it's made by a doctor, Dr. Hertz. She is someone who always got the vaccines and got these particular shots as well. She was always pro-vaccine, and as a doctor, that's what she always did. Whatever vaccine was necessary or recommended she got, she wanted to trust what she was being told, that they were safe and effective. She ultimately ended up suffering a significant disability. She couldn't get help from other sources, so she began doing her own research, and that research ultimately led her to find many other people just like her. And you can see those under Real Stories. There are videos of them. There's also written information from each one of those. And that's just part of the personal stories. You'll see a lot of other information there as well. I just want to encourage you to take a look at those, and we'll give you the link to that as we come back. But bottom line is, one of the things that we see is that these shots from the COVID shots, in fact, in 5 months, we're now moving into the 8th month since the first deployment, but in 5 months, 5 to 6 months, there were more deaths from the COVID shots in around 6 months, no more than 6 months, than all of the cumulative deaths from all of the reported vaccine injuries since VAERS, this database by the CDC, was founded on July 1, 1990. That's staggering. More people are reported to have died in about 6 months than all the reported deaths from all of the vaccines reported over the previous 31 years. You look at another phase of what we went through, and that was an emergency acceleration in the 1970s under President Gerald Ford, and that was for the swine flu. People began to develop Guillain-Barré syndrome. People obviously have been suffering, some people, from Guillain-Barré syndrome from some of these shots as well. Guillain-Barré syndrome, as you know, can be a very serious and certainly fatal, a very debilitating condition, I should say. But that particular swine flu in the 1970s, you had the same kind of CDC presence in pushing media, that it was all safe, it was very effective. They were doing lots of advertisements. There was reports that several hundred thousand people would die and everybody should be doing their part to protect others and themselves and get these shots. You know, the swine flu vaccine was stopped after 53 deaths, as a failed experiment that was rushed to market, but didn't have the 10 plus or so years, and certainly not the 5 years of testing. That was deployed very quickly. 53 deaths and it was stopped. But from the beginning of these shots in mid-December until now, we've had more than 53 reported deaths every single day. And so that alone ought to raise the alarm as you're thinking about your decision, but also as you're thinking about people with regards to their sincerely held religious beliefs. And I'll get to certain aspects of those sincerely held religious beliefs as I get towards the end. Let me look at the COVID shots and emergency use authorization. Emergency use authorization is something that is done under the federal law when you have a drug that's already in existence, but now you're going to authorize it off-label to treat a new emergency that has come upon the scene. Or if there's nothing available that's already on the market, as what was done in this case, to create a new drug, a new injection. Obviously, I believe quite strongly, based upon the research, there was a lot of information that said that there are already approved drugs that were FDA licensed for decades, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, the nutraceuticals that have already been discussed, that were on the market. So that's another debate I'm not going to necessarily get into. However, the point is that anything under emergency use authorization, specifically according to this federal law, requires that people have, quote, the option to accept or refuse administration of the product. You can't get any more clear than that. The next part of it says the FDA has an obligation to ensure that recipients of the vaccine under an EUA are informed and that they have the option to accept or refuse the vaccine. This particular quote from Amanda Cohen, a medical doctor, the executive secretary of the Centers for Disease Control Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, said, under an emergency use authorization, an EUA, vaccines are not allowed to be mandatory. It is indisputable what the law is. I'll come back to that and circle back to that issue a little bit later. Let's look at the issue of what's called vaccine passports, so-called. Vaccine passports, again, predated COVID. COVID is being used to accelerate vaccine passports. Vaccine passports are the proof that somebody got some kind of an injection. Obviously, one sort of vaccine passport is paper. But obviously, as you know, that can easily be forged. The other is electronic. And for us in the United States, the easiest way is a cell phone or some other kind of electronic. For others globally, where those kinds of electronics are not available, it's something that is, in some cases, that's under development, have been under development prior to COVID, an implantable chip that you ultimately just scan, and that'll have your whole, not only vaccine history, but your medical history on that chip as well. Has a nice ring to it in a sense that, well, if you're treating people in third world countries and you don't know what kind of medications or history they have, you'll have their medical history right. But on the other hand, it is a very significant intrusion on freedom and has an enormous power of individuals to control other people and just literally turn them on or turn them off. In Israel, for example, I have a friend who has a vaccine passport, and it's a QR code on his cell phone, and he scans that to go in and out of certain places. He also has a tracking app that tracks his entire movement. So if he goes to a meeting, he goes to church, wherever he goes, that tracks where he is. It also tracks other people in his proximity. And if somebody in that proximity is suspected to have been exposed, in this case to COVID, he gets an alert and he has to go to his home to quarantine. And if he moves outside of that bubble, then he is warned to get back in. If he doesn't, then obviously the authorities will go to the next step. That's Israel. This really is been done in China, and it's been done long before COVID. And COVID is now added to their tracking and also their so-called green pass, or these passports, if you will, that are color-coded, red and yellow and green, and that determines whether or not you have access to restaurants, public places, whether you can fly on an airplane, and whether you're with someone. It not only has your medical, but it also has your financial as well. You can literally be turned off, and many people have, as they've gone to the airport. You go in to do your normal check, and you show your phone or your ticket, and then it comes up that you are not very highly ranked on the social credits, and consequently, you're not able to board. The incredible thing is that this is actually happening in the United States. I'll come back to that in just a second here. This is from the MIT's Technology Review, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, April 12, 2020. It's been pushing these vaccine passports before there was even a COVID vaccine available. And this is what the MIT says. And MIT Technology Review is loaded with this kind of information. This new social order will seem unthinkable to many people in so-called free countries, but any change can quickly become normal if people accept it. The new normal will be that we are used to the idea that in some cases being able to move around freely is dependent on us being able to show that we're healthy. There will be a greater acceptance, I think, of that kind of health monitoring. That's MIT Technology Review. This is Naomi Wolf, PhD, author, and a Rhodes Scholar. She politically is on the opposite spectrum of where I would be on certain social issues, for example. But she is right on, and we're obviously tracking together, and many others with her, on this particular issue. She says this: I cannot say this forcefully enough. This is literally the end of human liberty in the West if this plan unfolds its plan. Vaccine passports sound like a fine thing. If you don't know what these platforms can do, I'm CEO of a tech company. I understand what this platform does. It's not about the vaccine. It's not about the virus. It's about data. And once this rolls out, you don't have a choice about being part of the system. What people have to understand is that any other functionality can be loaded onto that platform with no problem at all. In The End of America, Dr. Wolf also says the new biofashion in the West, very much driven by big tech leaders and soon to be exploited by our enemies geopolitically, is a war against free human beings and against the qualities that makes us human. But this time, we do not just face a war on freedom. This time, we face a war on human beings and all that makes us human. If you put together just three people that made comments in the last 10 to 14 days, then this would be CNN's Don Lemon, Mayor de Blasio of New York City, and a former advisor to President Obama, who wrote in the American, or the Atlantic, which is owned by Lauren Jobs, who is the widow of Apple founder Steve Jobs. They collectively have said that if you don't have these COVID shots, you should not be able to work, buy groceries, enter public places, gather in public places, even outdoors. You should not be able to go to restaurants. You should not be able to go to any place outside of your home. In fact, you should be placed on a no-fly list. New York City right now has the NYC key. That is one of these vaccine passports. And if you look at the laundries of what you cannot do, if you don't have this digital proof of having these shots, it is stunning. Other than saying that you cannot work, you simply, and for those people that actually work in these industries, they can't work under the NYC key that has just been launched in New York City. But as somebody who's not employed in one of those many, many, many laundry list of places, the only place that you can go is to your home and maybe to your work if it's outside of one of those places outside of New York City. It's frankly startling. As a result of what was happening with regards to, this was before mandatory COVID shots were even talked about, but we messaged on that and warned about it in March and April of 2020, and we began to really talk to various state legislators around the country in early 2021. We prepared model legislation that would ultimately ban vaccine passports. The very first one was this one here in Florida, and what these codes stand for is it started off with an executive order, but now it's in statute. This one here is in statute only. This one, the 50-50, it's in executive order only. 50-50 means that it bans vaccine passports for the government. In other words, the government can't have anything to do with vaccine passports. But the private sector can. Now, these particular states, and there are many of them that have come online, there's more that are coming online as well as we speak. They only, let's look at Florida. Florida, for example, started off as an executive order and went to a statute. And Florida's vaccine passport ultimately bans both government as well as private sectors from requiring proof of vaccination in order to be a patron in a public place of accommodation. So if you go to a restaurant, a store, or any other place open to the public, you do not have to show proof of vaccination. However, it does not apply to the employment employer-employee relationship. I'll give you an example of how the Florida executive order and then the statute actually has been very effective in this respect with regards to patrons. The cruise industry wanted to have, under pressure from the Centers for Disease Control, 95% of the people that were cruising were to be vaccinated by one of the three shots, two for Pfizer, two for Moderna, and one for Johnson & Johnson. You had to have a combination. You had to have the complete set of any one of those. The CDC ultimately was sued. The federal court ultimately prevented the CDC from implementing that. They said that that was beyond the CDC's constitutional authority, and that particular provision was struck down, as was the continual extension of the rent and mortgage moratorium for people who are tenants. The CDC did that, and federal courts have struck that down as also violating the CDC's authority and powers. So they were being pressured by the CDC to have all these people that were boarding get some kind of vaccine passport, and they collided with Florida law, and Florida law ultimately has prevailed at this point in time. But this does not protect individuals in the employment place. So let's look at some vaccine passports and mandates and some of the legal defenses. One of them we've already talked about. You have the emergency use authorization, which says, as I said very clearly, that you have the right to accept or refuse any one of these shots. You can't be any more clear than that. And the reason for that is anything that's under EUA is by nature experimental and investigational. It's experimental and investigational because it has not gone through the rigorous testing, there's not been enough time, and there's not been a wide range of people that have been tested. But particularly, there's not been enough time to determine short, medium, and long-term complications from whatever the EUA product is, in this case, these COVID shots. So no one can be forced. So you ask yourself, well, why are these vaccine mandates happening all over the country? And I can tell you that everything exploded in the end of July, around the third week of July 2021. Before that, I don't know of any mandated place where you had to get the COVID shots. There were recommendations. Some were strong recommendations, but nothing was mandated because both the government and the private sector were clearly abiding by this federal law. The very first entity that ultimately came out and violated that was the Veterans VA, and they issued an order that all T-38 employees, which are all your healthcare workers, had to get the mandatory COVID shots, and you had 8 weeks to do it or be terminated. We pushed back on that immediately, saying that, one, it violated the emergency use authorization law, and in addition to that, it violates Title VII, which applies both to private and public employment. I'll get to that in just a second. But for federal workers or for state workers, it also violates the state constitution free exercise of religion protections, and certainly the First Amendment free exercise of religion protections of the United States Constitution, among other laws. Clearly illegal to force these on government employees. The VA knew that it was illegal. So what they did quietly, without any fanfare and no public press release like they did on the initial push, they put up on the website a single page, and all you have to do now is check the box that says that you have a sincerely held religious conviction and you have an accommodation within the VA. Instead of saying that when they actually made this statement, they really tried to, I think, spin this issue and frankly deceive people. And that's very disturbing. What's even more disturbing is that the acting attorney general under the current administration issued a statement, issued an opinion to support the VA. And on page one of that acting attorney general's opinion, it says clearly what the law I've already read, that people have the option to accept or refuse. It repeats that repeatedly throughout its memo. It even references all of the FDA statements regarding the same thing, that you have the option to accept or refuse. It even refers to the fact sheets that are with and accompany every one of these particular products, Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson, which say you have the option to accept or refuse. But unbelievably, what happened is the DOJ then said, the attorney, acting attorney general opinion said, that the option to accept or refuse means only that we have the requirement to tell you you have the option to accept or refuse. And once we tell you you have the option to refuse, you can no longer refuse. And I'm not exaggerating that one bit. That's what the memo says. That's like saying to somebody that your Miranda rights are satisfied when the officer says to you, after you've been taken into custody, you have the right to remain silent. Now that I've told you you have the right to remain silent, now you have to speak and tell me everything. No, the right to remain silent, like the right to refuse, is the right to remain silent, and the right to refuse is the right to refuse. However, what happened was knowing that this was the law that banned forced vaccines or forced coercion, that opened up a floodgate. And that happened the third week of July 2021. The VA was first, then there were some federal government sectors that also began mandating it. Then there were private, there were some state entities that were doing so. There were some state agencies that were following suit. And then a flood of private, both employer as well as medical hospitals mandated all of this. I'll come back and talk about the magnitude of what we're seeing. Let's move on to the next level of protection that people would have, for example, in the workplace. And I'm not going to go through all of the different protections that military men and women would have or those in the educational sector that are not employees. But Title VII applies to those employees that have 15 or more employees in the workplace. So it doesn't apply to everyone. You would have other state laws that would apply to them as well that are very similar to Title VII. And it says you cannot discriminate on the basis of religion in the workplace. There's been a number of Seventh-day Adventist cases where somebody wanted accommodation on the Sabbath, and the employer said, no, you have to work on the Sabbath, and just like any other day, it's not going to be anything special for you, and we're not going to accommodate you. These employers, ultimately, many of those lost those lawsuits because you have to, once that sincerely held religious belief is presented to the employer then has an obligation to undertake reasonable accommodations to ultimately accommodate that. In one case of a major retail market segment, they said, no, we have no exceptions. You have to work on Saturday, you have to work on Sunday. We're going to make everybody the same. Whether your holy day is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, it doesn't matter. Everybody has to work based upon our schedule. That mega employer that is a national well-known employer lost that case because they didn't undertake any effort to provide reasonable accommodation for those employees. Title VII applies both to the state, I should say to the private, as well as the government workers. And you have to, once someone presents a sincerely held religious belief, you have to ultimately do your best to accommodate that, unless it results in what's called an undue hardship on the employer. Well, you know, with all of the telecommuting that's happened recently, obviously most employers have been able to determine that telecommuting is permissible. And moreover, nobody's had the shot since the pandemic began up until recently. And consequently, if you have the ability to be able to have people work during that time, what has changed now? Just because there is a shot doesn't mean that now you can force that. But this has just exploded across the country, and I'll give you some stories in a few moments. In addition to state and federal laws, you also have other laws that are on the state level. For example, we had a situation with regards to Loyola University in Chicago. Loyola University knew what the law was, both the EUA and the federal law and its state law. Illinois has one of the strongest conscience protection laws in the country with regards to any kind of forced medical treatment, whether it's vaccine shots or anything else. You have a right to dissent and opt out. Loyola knew that. They gave their students a very short window to get the COVID shots or be removed from their education. Now, some of these students are just starting. Some of those students have 1 year left. Some of those are in their last semester. Some of those are in clinicals. And they are literally a couple of months away from graduating. And they have sincerely held religious beliefs. And many of these have sincerely held religious beliefs for a number of reasons. One, many have this particular belief, and that is that the shots are made by, at least in the testing phase or some aspect of the development phase, all three of them, Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson, with an aborted fetal cell line. And for many people that believe in the sanctity of human life, that God created us in His image, that Psalm 139, He formed us in the womb and He knew us, that in Jeremiah, He knew Jeremiah while he was still in the womb and He called him, that Proverbs 6, where God says He hates these things, they are abomination to Him, one of which is the shedding of innocent blood. and many, many other scriptures in both the Old and New Testament, that life is sacred. Life begins in the womb. It comes from God. Each person is created in the image of God and is consequently valued by God and intricately important to God, that you don't want to have anything directly or indirectly, tangentially or any other way, condoning it, supporting it, financing it in any way, to participate with or be part of the taking of innocent human life. It is repugnant. It is, as Proverbs 6 says, an abomination. That word is a very, very strong word. The Hebrew word is used a number of times with regards to other pagan nations, some of which were actually engaging in sacrificing of their children, making their children or their sons and daughters pass through fire as human sacrifices. And the scriptures refer to them as the abomination of these various nations and describes what they're doing. No one wants to be put in a situation where they are an abomination to God, who not only created us, but to our Savior, who gave his life for us and loves us deeply. And so that's a very serious issue that people face. Others may have a broader religious freedom or liberty objection, and that is, for example, 1 Corinthians chapter 6, that our bodies are the temple of the Holy Spirit which dwells in us. We are not our own. We are purchased with a price, and therefore we are obligated, because of the great cost that our Lord paid for us, to ultimately glorify God in our bodies. Our bodies are the foundation, our temple being the temple of the Holy Spirit, that's the foundation of our religious belief. That foundation then becomes informed about things exterior to that belief. For example, our bodies are the temple of God. We're bought with a price. We're not our own. So we should glorify God in our bodies. So therefore, we want not to drink certain things, eat certain things, or do certain things that ultimately defile our bodies. So if you have two glasses before you, you have a glass like this that looks just like water, and this is water. But you have another glass that's identical to that, and it's also clear. But from information or from experience, you know that one is pure water, and that's good for you, and one is not pure water. Maybe it's some kind of poison or some kind of arsenic, and that's bad for you. You're going to want to drink the pure water because that ultimately does good for your body, which is the temple of the Holy Spirit. You're not going to want to put something in your body that ultimately harms your body. And so,
okay, I wanted to continue. This is a very long, I'm going to split this up in like three different sessions. I'm finally excited that I'm hearing pastors doing something with the wake of what's going on. There's too many of them that are just sitting on the sidelines. Literally big ones that I've heard tell people their congregation to get shots. There's just too many of those that do that. And if your congregation is doing that, it's time to leave. If your congregation is not standing up for you and your human rights and your Christian values, then it's time to leave. It's time to find somewhere else. I'm going to say it like that. You have got to get in the fight and not comply. You've gotten to get in the fight and stand for your values and your family's values. Do you understand that they are trying to take it away? I don't want to rant because this is so long. And I'm just thankful, so thankful. This is encouraging to my soul. This is encouraging to me because there's things on here I'd want to say and I can't. And the things I've seen, they can't talk about. And I can't. I care. And so this is why it's out there. This is why I spend the time researching and I put it all out there for you.